Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. The highly anticipated special election for the state Senate's 10th district seat is over. Democrat Stephanie Hansen won last Saturday, scoring a resounding victory over Republican John Marino and Libertarian Joseph Lazendorfer. Hansen drew 58% support, beating Marino by over 2,200 votes. And turnout was 35%, unheard of in a special election. Hansen's win in the race that drew national attention and over $1 million in fundraising money allows Democrats to maintain their nearly four decades hold on the state Senate with an 11-10 margin. And Democrats nationally are hailing Hansen's decisive victory as the first salvo in their battle against President Trump's agenda and Republicans' hold on the White House and Congress. Delaware Public Media political reporter James Dawson tracked this race from its start and joins us this week to break down what it all means. James, thanks for being with us.
Hey, good to be here, Tom.
Well, you have followed this race, and recalling how close Marino came to upending the former seat holder, now Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hall Long, a couple of years ago, how surprising is Hansen's victory size, the margin, even the Democrats?
I don't think it was that shocking that she won. The margin was a decent bit higher than a lot of people had thought. But the 2014 election that you mentioned between Hall Long and Marino was kind of an anomaly because her husband was caught stealing Republican campaign signs. But if you go back and look at November's election and even 2012, Democrats just rolled over the GOP. It really wasn't close.
The turnout, as we mentioned, was massive by special election standards. And in this state, turnout generally favors Democrats. But does that turnout and the Democrats' fundraising and use of big names like Joe Biden and Martin O'Malley to drive it entirely explain Hansen's victory in this race?
I think this was really the key. I mean, we're talking about 35% turnout, which on its face really isn't that great, right? You have a third of registered voters coming out.
The bar's pretty low.
Right. But compare that to turnout in the 2015 special election where we saw 10% of registered voters come out and even 7% a few years before that, and you'll see why it's so important. But I'd say the fundraising side was more important than getting big headliners to make noise while knocking on doors with the campaigns themselves. I mean, we're talking $1 million between the two sides here and their affiliated PACs, which is just astronomical for this race. It's going to be even higher once we get the final numbers, too. And Democrats just really didn't want to screw around on this one. They knew the Senate was on the line, and they tapped into frustration built up from President Donald Trump's first couple months in office.
We even saw TV ads from Stephanie Hansen, which in a state Senate race is also somewhat unheard of. Did it feel almost in some ways that she kind of pulled like from the Lisa Blunt Rochester congressional race playbook in terms of got a lot of money, got some TV, just going to kind of flood the field?
Yeah, I think that was definitely part of it. I mean, the TV ads came from at least what I saw. They came from the PAC side where they spent a ton of money on those mailers, you name it. I mean, robocalls. We saw the market pretty much saturated. And when I talked to a couple of voters who unfortunately didn't want to go on the record with me, but they were saying they were just fed up with how many pieces of mail they got, how many calls they got, how many people showed up on their doors just knocking, hey, are you going to vote for Stephanie? At least it caused some people to stay home, but obviously not enough to make a difference.
How about on the Republican side? How big a disappointment is this for Republicans to lose by such a margin in this race that they thought they might have a chance in?
Yeah, I think that's always a disappointment, but they knew it was going to be tough going into it. The GOP made gains in the House in 2014, couldn't break the supermajority that year or in November. They've had more success in the Senate. They knocked off two seats over the past two cycles, including the former Senate pro tem, obviously, in November. What we're going to need to keep an eye on is whether or not Republicans kept any of their money in reserve for next year to maybe try and win one of those statewide races that are going to be up or take more turf in the General Assembly. And if they blew their cash early, then we might not see much of a splash in 2018.
Does it also speak to the idea of that the candidate for Republicans is very important? I mean, John Marino had run before and he had some success, but maybe he wasn't necessarily the right candidate right now, as opposed to some of these other Republicans who have been able to pull off surprising victories.
Well, and there was just so much confrontation and consternation in that campaign itself. I mean, they went through three campaign managers in a little less than 2 months, right? So that's definitely part of the problem. They tried to tap in. There was also a lot of push and pull between the more moderate state GOP side versus more grassroots Tea Party faction here in Delaware. So he did try to tap in maybe subconsciously to that Trump feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Let's make Delaware first again.
Right.
even though he denied that there's any sort of connection between Donald Trump's campaign and his own campaign. But it just didn't seem to work out for him very well.
So maybe there are some lessons for Republicans to learn from this race that could and some of the other races that they've won as they start to look at what their strategy should be like. Let's talk a little bit more about the fallout from this race, and we'll start a little bit more locally. Democrats maintain control of the state Senate, as we mentioned, now 11-10 margin. What does that mean short-term and long-term for the General Assembly?
I think in the short term, not much is going to change. Democrats in the Senate are still going to need that Republican help if they want to pass any kind of tax or fee increase, if they even come up for a vote. And as for the long-term view, again, I think it's going to be watching how much effort the GOP puts into the 2018 election, mostly due to their cash flow or, like we just talked about, whether or not they have the bench deep enough to really field good candidates.
Is the most immediate impact that Sean Garvin is likely to be DENREC secretary sooner rather than later?
It certainly seems that way, at least if Governor John Carney can get all of the Democrats to vote for him. We'll see what happens there. I don't see any sort of hesitation, but it does seem likely here in a couple weeks.
And what are the expectations we have for Stephanie Hansen as a lawmaker? Do we have a sense of where she kind of fits in on the playing field and how she could impact the agenda going forward?
Well, the sense I've gotten from her is that she's going to be more to the left than many of her fellow Democrats in the Senate, but I don't think you could really classify her as a true progressive. She's a land use and environmental lawyer by trade who wants to be on the Natural Resources Committee, but we don't know yet what her committee assignments will be. During the campaign, much of her agenda was a little bit vague, but brownfields, redevelopment, and other economic issues are really at the top of her playbook. And that gels nicely with Governor Carney's plan to look at issues like that, but it's really too early to say specifically what we can expect from her.
Let's talk about it nationally. Democrats are pointing to this race, as we mentioned, as kind of a first referendum on President Trump and his agenda, and a sign that they're energized to regain their footing after taking some pretty big hits in November. Even Tuesday night after President Trump's speech before a joint session of Congress, new DNC chair Tom Perez was talking about this race on network newscasts as he was being interviewed. But this race in a blue state, in a district where registration favors a Democrat, is it really that much of a bellwether, do you think?
In terms of people rejecting Trump, it's probably not the best example you could use. I mean, this is still a majority Democrat district and a blue state, even though it leans a little bit more toward the center. What it really signals is the willingness from people across the country to volunteer for these local races. I mean, I was talking to a Democratic staffer a few days ago who told me he saw people drive from as far away as Ohio and Indiana just to knock on doors for Stephanie Hansen. So you hear stories like that in presidential campaigns, but that's an incredible amount of effort for a state Senate seat. And you couple that with the vast amounts of money that poured into the campaign, and it shows that Democrats can be serious about focusing on these smaller races. The key question is going to be whether or not the party can actually sustain that kind of enthusiasm and focus into the 2018 cycle.
And one other thing, kind of going back to what you alluded to before, there were some people who kind of were getting a little tired of it. Is there that danger in this state where, again, you know, there still seems to be a desire for that retail politic, that we don't want that many outsiders and that much outside money? Is there a chance that it hits a tipping point where it starts to kind of maybe backfire a little bit?
It really depends on the state. I mean, like you said, people in Delaware generally like to meet their candidates face to face. I don't think it's really going to be that much of a danger, since Delaware is one of six states entirely controlled by Democrats. It's small enough where anyone who's running for office can go and meet their constituents in a pretty easy way. So I don't think the oversaturation is going to be any kind of a tactic coming up from the Delaware Democratic Party, but I think you might see it more on a nationwide scale.
Fair enough. Anything else you take away from this race and where we go from here?
I think a lot of Democrats have been fairly apprehensive about the huge amount of money used by Hansen's allied PAC in this race, and Republicans have called them out for it. It obviously didn't matter much to voters in the ballot box, but they say they've got to play by the rules that govern everyone. And ever since the Citizens United Supreme Court case allowed this kind of dark money spending, I mean, even campaign finance reformers are starting to adopt that playbook out of fear that they'll lose if they don't choose to do so.
We're also going to start seeing some real movement in the General Assembly now that this race is in the books?
That too. I mean, like you and I have talked about, some bills have been held back from people who generally don't actually necessarily care what kind of fallout comes from introducing legislation. So we're finally going to get kickstarted. We've had the first round of budget hearings. Governor Carney is expected to introduce his proposed budget here more toward the end of March after after the latest state revenue forecast. So it's going to be a pretty easy ramp up once the legislative session starts March 14th.
Fair enough. James Dawson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And remember, you can follow all of James Dawson's coverage of Delaware politics anytime at DelawarePublic.org. And next up on The Green, we hear from Delaware State University President Harry Williams about meeting President Donald Trump and the Trump administration's plans to work with historically black colleges and universities. Stay with us. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. We'll be right back.